Good morning. Just a little bit of a scheduling change. I'm flying to the States just for Shabbos, so tomorrow and Sunday I'm not here. I'm flying to now be back with you on Sunday. So I've been giving this shiur for about six or seven years. So every year I try to find Rashi's I haven't spoken about, just to keep it fresh. Truma is a little bit challenging, because most of the Rashi's are very technical and descriptive of Kalim. But I want to discuss, there are many famous Rashi's, primarily in the beginning of Truma, that aren't about the Kalim, but I'll pick Rashi's I haven't spoken about before. The Rashi says that there were 13 materials donated by Am Yisrael to the Mishkan. He actually has a list of 13. It doesn't say which the 13 are. Let me find the Rashi. Yud Gimel Devarim, Rashi says, Hamurim Be'inyan, Kulim Hutzrichu L'melechas HaMishkan, Ola Bigdei Kuhuna Ashet Tekdakdei Bohem. When you read the Pasuk, Zahav, Kesef, Nechoshes, Tcheles, Argaman, Tolashani. Wow, 13. 13 Midos. 13 is a very important number. 13 Midos HaRachamim. But if you look at the list, there really are 15. Zav, Kesef, Nechoshes, Tcheles, Argamon, Tolashani, Sheish, Izim, Elim, Tchashim, Shitim, Shemen, Besamim, Shoham, and Miluim. So that's 15. So why does Rashi say 13? Probably because many want to claim that there are 13 materials that were donated by the population. But the gemstones on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol, to fasten the ephod, and the small plate stones that fit into the Avnei Milum, which I'll talk about a little bit, those may not have been donated by the general population. According to one medrash, these were donated by the Nesi'im. The Nesi'im deliver these special stones. So when Rashi says Yud Gimel, he's creating a partition between the Zav, Kesef, and Choshes that most people had available, in part because of the Egyptian loot, the Egyptian wealth that they acquired. But these very rare stones, it's unlikely that everyone would have them, and therefore had to be donated only by special leaders of the tribe who had access to passing caravans, or probably made a diplomatic interaction, maybe even in Mitzrayim. These were the Nesi'im. Again, we haven't yet seen the Nesi'im. We'll see the Nesi'im in a very notorious role in Bamidbar. The Nesi'im sink Sefer Bamidbar, certainly when it comes to their role in the Meraglim. But we don't know who these Nesi'im were yet, but maybe we assume that the Nesi'im in the beginning of Bamidbar, those lists in the beginning of Bamidbar. Either way, this partitioning highlights a fundamental tension in the process of donating for the Mishkan, and that tension is very powerful throughout Sefer Bamidbar. How should the Beis HaMikdash, how should the Mishkan be crafted? So we're very democratic. We live in a very democratic era. Everyone should be equal. There shouldn't be any favoritism. No one should stand out. Every vote counts once. Everyone's the same, no matter your rank, no matter your background. And it's certainly a powerful drive of the process of building the Mishkan. On the other hand, there's a reality that wealthy people can afford, that institutional wealth can create, and the Nesi'im had institutional wealth, either on their own, and that's how they rose to these positions, certainly in those societies, or because they gathered the wealth of the entire population, and as the representative of their respective shvatim, they're able to afford certain stones that the commoner probably didn't have access to. So you'd say, look, everything should be democratic, everything should be equal, but that may take away from the beauty that more organized and institutionalized groups can create. So there's always a tension between being more democratic, simple, homespun, bring what you can. On the other hand, think of this yeshiva. Okay, this yeshiva at this stage, because it's pooled together so many resources from across the world, it has a regality to it that celebrates Torah, that celebrates HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you walk in and Beis HaMikdash says something to you, and the beauty of the Beis HaMikdash. On the other hand, there's something powerful about being homespun, where everyone just brings whatever they can, and just have a caravan, school in a caravan. And so there's a tension that Rashi's highlighting. 13 materials were delivered by everyone, but two materials, the gemstones of the Nesi'im, were donated specifically by people of wealth in order to create this regality and royalty that the average person maybe couldn't achieve. Now, talking about the word truma appears three times in that first iconic pasuk. Dabel ben Yisrael v'yichali truma, me'ez kolisha she'edvenu libo t'chuas trumasi, v'zos ha'truma. It's actually the next pasuk. So the word truma appears three times in rapid succession. V'yichali truma, me'ez kolisha she'edvenu t'chuas trumasi, v'zos ha'truma. Rashi quotes the Medrash, it appears in the Medrash, it's also Yerushalmi and Shkalim, that the three iterations of the word Truma refer to three different processes of collection. There was the general collection on display in Parshas Truma. You bring your gold, you bring your silver, you bring your sheish, you bring your tachash, you bring your argamon. But there were two mandatory collections that were standardized. Everyone had to give a certain amount of kesef, chatzi shekel, for the adanim, for the basis of the krushim. There were 100 adanim to hold the krushim in place. That was standardized and mandatory. You'd have a choice, and you couldn't give more, you couldn't give less. And the second standardized donation was the donation for korbanos, which is starting. We're building a mishkan, we have to actually bring korbanos. This is the yearly donation, which Parsha Shkalim launches. We read Parsha Shkalim last week. So essentially, even though we're seeing the very personalized truma of Zav, Ketzef, and Nechoshes, there's also two different processes of collection taking place in the background. They're mandatory, and they're standardized. Now, Rav Amital always quoted a Maharal. Rav Amital would quote a lot of Maharals and modernize them, because the Maharal spoke in a slightly different language. It's more of a metaphysical language. But basically, Rav Amital quoted the Maharal that this establishes a certain duality in religion. And I'm going to change Rav Amital a little bit, not by changing, but by adding. Rav Amital would speak with us about the fact that the base of religion has to be mandatory. Adonim are the base. The base, the foundation of belief, is you accept and you buy in and you feel mitzvah v'yosa, and Rav Lichtenstein would say that phrase so often, we're born as a mitzvah v'yosa, we're born to duty. So you don't have a choice. If you don't want to give zav, you don't have to give zav. If you don't want to give our gamma, you don't have to give our gamma. But you all have to bring the kesef to the adonim. So the baseline of religion is obligatory. However, you have to build on top of that a voluntary, personalized experience. So first you have to buy in and accept mitzvahs. But it doesn't and it shouldn't thwart you or prevent you from trying to think about how you can create a more of a voluntary buy-in to religion. That same duality at Har Sinai. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to hoist the mountain and threaten us? Shem Tei Kiburach, we already said a kolosh HaDivir HaShem Nasa V'Nishma. I don't like to always quote the Maharal again, because who knows what happens when people's hearts change and fluctuations and vacillations of the human heart. Verse Hashem says, just realize you accepted it involuntarily. Now, kol ha-shedibar Hashem nasa v'nishma, now you can try to create a voluntary element. I want to add one slight component to that, because that's the offset primarily between the donations that are on display in Truma and the foundation of the Adonim. But there's also a second aspect, in particular about the korbanos. When the Torah describes the machzis ha-shekel for korbanos in Parshas Ketisa, it's very insistent, hadal lo ha-asher lo yarbeh, hadal lo yamit machzis ha-shekel. It's not just a question of mandatory versus voluntary, but personal versus standardized. These are two different factors. One is, are you obligated or is it voluntary? Two is, are you the same as everyone else or are you different? When it came to the zav, the kesef, and the choshes, everyone by definition delivered different gifts. When it came to the machzis ha-shekel, in particular for the korbanos, because everyone sharing the korban is the same, there's a standardization. And that's another part of Avodas Hashem. To create a world that's standardized in certain areas, we all more or less keep Shabbos the same way, put on tefillin the same way, mikveh the same way, kashrus the same way. But then to still allow and to encourage for differentiation. Because through differentiation comes personal expression and a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then, of course, the two, voluntary, volition, and personalization are basically two sides of the same coin. If you opt into something, it's easier to personalize it. If it's personalized, it's easier to opt into it because you feel that it's you. So in order for it to be personal, it has to be volitional. In order to be volitional, it has to be personal. So generally, these are two factors, but the two factors work in tandem. Should religion be standardized and obligatory? You buy in, you don't have a choice, you don't have a voice, you're obligated. Should religion be personalized and volitional? And the truth is, it has to be a combination of the two. It has to be the baseline, as Avamitel said, is obligatory, but there has to be a personalized tower that you build on top of that. So the Mishkan is very iconic as we're describing how you build a house for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Vavim Mishkan Eben, that's a metaphoric for how you build your own house. Now, one other Rashi highlights the fact that they're called Avnei Miluim. Why are they called Avnei Miluim? They should be called Avnei Yakar, in our modern terminology, Avnei Kavod. Why are they called Avnei Miluim? The Avnei Shomer are, well, we'll talk about just the Avnei Miluim right now. Hold off the Avnei Shom for later. So Rashi says, the stones are described by their function, not their texture or their quality. Why are they called Avnei Miluim? So Rashi says, Al Shem She'osim Bazav Moshav Kimin Guma. Well, the Ksas HaChoshen, there were little sockets. And Nosim Shem Ha'evin Lamalos HaGuma. So these stones filled the sockets. Levikach Nikru Avnei Miluim. And the makom, these sockets were called mishbatzo. So there's a socket in the choshen, whether it's an actual socket, as we would say, in a diamond ring, or just the space that was carved to the dimensions of the stones, that the stone would slide in snugly and tight. But the Avanim were called Avanim because of their function to fill the Ksosach, or to fill the Choshen plate. Now, this is also an important, it's hard for us to fully identify with this because we live in a hyper-free state of mind. Because of 250 years of free will and democracy and human liberty and Bechira Chavshis, so when we talk about destiny and filling a role, we find a little bit abrasive because, what do you mean, nothing's predetermined? I don't have a role. Let me express myself. Let me find my own interests. I don't have a predetermined role. Now, of course, Yiddishkeit completely avoids any hint of Calvinism or predeterminism. No one has predetermined anything. Nothing about this world is predetermined, the Rambam being the champion of Bechira Chavshis. But when sometimes when we talk about what's your role, what's your function, what situation is made for you, and how can you choose your future, not just based on interest, but based on what's the fit? What do I need to do? I'm a stone, and what socket fits me? How can I be an avnei milum? How can I fill a need? How can I fill a suitability? How can I? Those words are harder for moderns to think about because we see the world as wide open, fresh and free, make your choice, and if you don't, it's a cop-out. And again, it's a very delicate balance. Where are you in history? What does Hashem expect of you in history? What did Hashem give you as tools? It's impossible to telegraph, oh, this is what you should be. A long time ago, we had Nevi'im, who probably gave us much more direct guidance, going to the only goal they did, and we're going to Mishlei. We don't really have that world, and we certainly are dominated by the sense of freedom of choice, and if you feel that you're not acting freely, it's going to be very incompatible with your overall life. It's not wise to feel cornered into something. Whenever boys ask me about chinuch or rabbanis, I see that they're younger and they have potential, I say, look, the most important thing is don't feel cornered in. It's so hard sometimes. It has to be a free choice. It has to be your choice because there's so much struggle and so much hardship. It's your choice to say, well, I made the choice, and therefore I have to live with the consequences and I've got to overcome struggles. But if you feel that you're cornered into something, there's nothing harder for someone when they feel they've been cornered into. But this is a restorative image that the Avanim are being called Avnei Miluim because they fill a certain place and they fill a certain area, and that's why the term Mimalei Asiyado is going to come up, or the Yimei Miluim is the term Miluim has connotations far beyond the literal translation of filling a gap or filling a socket or filling a specific location or orientation, but it becomes a very powerful world of filling roles and serving. So a lot of choosing professions in life and choosing lifestyles is living with that sense of where am I in history? What are the tools I have available? What are the needs of my generation? And how can I, still with a sense of free choice, make a decision that's not just based on what I feel is most convenient or I want, but how I feel I'll serve some broader need? It's a very delicate walk, and don't ever feel cornered, but also don't feel as if the word fate is a curse word. As I call it, the four-letter word is fate, and my destiny, responsibilities are more than four letters, is Avnei Miluim. It's also a lot about how, okay, maybe it's a little bit different, but I'll hold off on that right now because it's a little bit longer. So those are three interesting Rashis. One is the 13 versus the 15. Rashi says 13. It seems like there are 15. Rashi's probably cordoning off the Avnei Miluim and the Avnei Hashoah. Number two, the three different donations, the free-willing, voluntary, personalized donation, and the two mandatory ones. One, to highlight the obligatory nature of the platform of religion. Two, to highlight the undifferentiated democratic nature of korbanos, that everyone is accepted by Kodesh Baruch Hu, something that Rashi will repeat in Parshas Vayikra. The word nefesh is used by an ani to show that Hashem likes the carbon of an ani just as much as he likes the carbon of an ashi, even though it's just a bird or just soulless. And then the final Rashi is that they're called Avnei Miluim because they serve a role of filling a certain need, and that's part of their beauty. The Avnei Miluim were stunning, they were resplendent. There's a resplendence in recognizing fit and compatibility, not just free choice. Okay? Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Shabbat Shalom.